Ewan McCabe, the World Cup baby. Good morning to you.
Good morning, man. I'm feeling supremely and underwhelmingly underprepared here because I didn't realise that the Premiership started this morning. They don't have Friday night games, so I wasn't. So I'm probably not the right person to be sitting in this chair at the moment.
No. We allow sort of people underprepared because Graham Beasley's here, sportsfreak.co.nz. Magnificent on the Big Fat Chew in association with Burger King yesterday. Talked all things sport. But, Graham, I suppose on Mr. McCabe's question, wonder why they did kick it off. Is it normal for them to kick off with a solo game a day early?
It's a recent thing that they've introduced. They did it last year and I think maybe even the year before.
Why United Leicester City?
Oh, they're always going to start with United.
Yeah.
So pretty much who they were playing. It's an interesting thing that the Premier League and pretty much most of the leagues around Europe don't do Friday night football. And, you know, you think of how big Friday night is in this country across all codes, really, you know, to have a Friday night game. Premier League just doesn't do it. I think that's mainly because of when the European stuff starts, when the Champions League and Europa League probably in particular start, and they're on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. It kind of fills up the week, really, and there's no room for Friday night.
But
at this stage of the season, before the European stuff happens, they like to chuck one in.
Yeah, and also they've got the Championship on Friday nights, which is the league that Ipswich Town playing in.
And how did they go in their first game?
They drew 2-2 with a late equaliser against Blackburn Rovers, but obviously they don't want the Premiership to kind of be shadowed by the great football that you see in the Championship every week.
The real football, right?
Exactly.
If the World Cup is the pinnacle and the most followed thing, you know, as we've seen, massive. I mean, if you said the most influential things in football, where does the English Premier League actually sit, do you think? I mean, is it just behind the World Cup for popularity and following and all that sort of stuff?
I would
is
say
it the it biggest is. League in the world? Let's start with that. Is it the
in terms of television, in terms of TV, I think it's the biggest league in the world. Whether it's the best league in the world, that's always debatable. I think La Liga in Spain, Serie A in Italy's fallen away a little bit in recent times, but La Liga and the English Premiership are probably regarded as the two best in terms of quality. I think although the Premiership's kind of a six-team competition, you know, the top six are kind of very unusual for them to be interchanged. The thing, I guess, that takes a bit of the gloss off of La Liga is it's basically a two-team league between Barcelona and Real Madrid.
It's a question that there's no real answer for, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah, people do sort of argue and debate about that. I would suggest that the two biggest clubs in the world are Spanish, Real and Barcelona, but the Premier League, for its depth, it would be the biggest followed competition in the world.
And I think this Premier League's struggling a bit in the shadow of the World Cup. You know, it was only 26 days ago that the World Cup finished, and we're still kind of in the glow of that. And there hasn't been, I'm not sensing the same degree of anticipation.
Well, they haven't had as many warm-up matches in this year because of the World Cup, and a lot of those warm-up matches haven't featured players who were in the World Cup as well. So there's sort of been B teams, and that's why Jose Mourinho said that when 100,000 people turned up in the States to watch Man U playing Liverpool, that they wasted their money, which is one of the strangest calls I've ever heard from a manager in any sport.
Sounds like Brian Clough's back, doesn't it?
It's the way to put your team down.
Is Mourinho still good for football? Like, I don't think Wayne Bennett anymore is good for rugby league. Is Mourinho good for football?
I think still. Whether he's good for Manchester United or not is another question. And how they go this year is going to be one of the things that people are going to follow, because it's his third season with Man U, and typically in his third season with any club that he's been to, and he's been to quite a few, that's when things start to unravel, and they unravel pretty theatrically, really. So I still think he is good, but you don't take everything he says seriously, that's for sure.
The All Sports Breakfast with Nigel Yeldon, magnificent show produced by the magnificent Mark Kelly this morning. Threw it out there. Top three, bottom three. I want you to start thinking about that. You probably already have. A couple that came through. Aidan McLaughlin, big man on Twitter.
Yep.
Great man. Supports all our shows and loves the World Cup, baby. He's gone Man City, Liverpool and Spurs, top three. And down the bottom, he's gone Cardiff, Huddersfield and Brighton. Let's start with Aidan's thoughts. Or are you close to that? Are you anywhere near it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty right, actually. Man City are $1.60 favourites to win the Premier League. And for a competition of the size, that's really short odds.
That's Tiger Woods winning a golf major when he was at his prime.
Yep, that's right. So that's really short odds. However, no side has gone back-to-back in the Premier League for over 10 years now when Man U put three in a row together. So for some reason, teams seem to be struggling to do it 2 years in a row. And I think Man City's actually biggest focus this year will be the Champions League. So I just wonder, maybe I'm being optimistic and it's going to be a wide-open competition after all. But I don't think they will do it as easily this year as they did last year, but I think they'd be favourites. Liverpool, with all the money that's... be so ungracious, shouldn't I? With all the money that Liverpool have spent, you know, obviously they had a great squad last year as well. They've shored up the obvious issue that they had in that they didn't have a keeper who could catch the ball.
He was concussed, though.
Oh, that's right. Poor thing. So they've shored up that area. They paid a lot of money for that. But I would say that they would be this team that would be most likely to challenge them.
You and Damien Garrett, again, has come out with, let's go start with the bottom three, West Ham. New Zealand influence Cardiff and Huddersfield. And top three, he's gone City. Well, I think he's got top four here, actually. Top three, Damien, I do apologise. City, United and Liverpool.
Okay, so...
seems to be a common thread
there. Yes, it does. Jason Pyne also had those as the top three, don't they? Didn't he? And I think because we know about them, they're kind of... they've got the same manager, they're settled. Liverpool obviously have spent quite a bit of money in the off-season. But the other... It's a top six of two halves, isn't it? In that you've got City, Liverpool and Spurs are the ones people are talking about. But the interest is going to be in the other, the bottom half of the top six, if you like, which is Manchester United, Chelsea and Arsenal. There's a little bit of uncertainty around them. But look, they're all good teams and one of those three could not only push into the top three, but could very much be a title contender. In terms of the title... I think City are favourites, but they're definitely not going to win it by a country mile like they did last year. It's going to be close. And I think Liverpool may well be the big challenger there. Not only have they got a keeper, but they've signed Fabinho, who's a defensive midfielder. We all know they're going to score 160 goals up front. The issue for Liverpool is how they defend. That's what win titles. And Jurgen Klopp seems to have shored up things behind that front three or four. In terms of the bottom, he had... who did he have, Matt? Remind me again.
He had West Ham.
Yeah, that's a big call, isn't it? Because they've spent quite a bit of money and they've got a very good manager in Manuel Pellegrino. But
I'm hearing a rumour Reid might be on the market for about $10 million, £10 million.
Yeah, I saw that somewhere the other day. I've only seen it in one place and, you know, with rumours in the English Premier League, you need to see it about six times, really, before you start taking it seriously. But and with a price tag of £10 million, which I thought seemed pretty cheap. In this day now. So I don't know what the story is there. Of course, he's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, the injuries I would be a factor there.
Yeah, and I guess he's getting on. I mean, he's still in his 20s, though, isn't he? I'd be very surprised if West Ham went down. I think everyone's favourites to go down are Cardiff.
Yeah.
And typically, it's very rare. It happened last season, but it's very rare for all three sides that come up to stay up. So Cardiff have come up and probably aren't going to make it. Huddersfield were one of the surprise packages last year. People were picking them to go down, and they stayed up reasonably comfortably. But
I think only because they had a really good start.
They had their really good start and surprised until Christmas, and then sort of fell away after that. So people are thinking that will continue. It's the third side to go down that'll be hard to predict.
Yeah. So just on that, John Norman, a regular on this program, on Nigel's All Sports Breakfast, does a wonderful job for us covering the cricket. He was at Lord's watching England.
Eating grouse.
Playing India, and I think India got bowled out for 107 or something. But he's gone top Man City again, Liverpool and Spurs.
Yeah.
And bottom three, he's got Cardiff going out with Huddersfield, and in last place, Southampton.
Your Southampton?
Yeah, seems to be some... They were lucky to survive last year, Southampton, under Mark Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to motivate them and got them up.
I don't think they were lucky. He actually did quite a good job when he came in towards the end.
But they were sitting. They were in the relegation.
They narrowly stayed up. But what I'm saying is, when he arrived, they were you know, heading for the exit door. So he did a good job there. I don't think they will go down. They are
a feeder club to Liverpool, remember?
And they've got Danny Ings. They've signed Danny Ings on loan from Liverpool, and I think he'll make a difference.
Well,
and
if he stays fit, the problem with him is he's only played about three games in 3 years or something.
Well, Southampton be hoping he will. And Mark Hughes, I mean, he's a very experienced manager. I think Southampton will be okay. The third team, I think everybody's consensus is Cardiff and Huddersfield. It's going to be very tough for Cardiff. The thing is, it used to be basically all three teams that went up, you just said they're going to go back down, but that really has changed in recent years. You know, only last year none went down.
It was the first time for about 15 years.
Yeah, though, but they all stayed up. But it's only been one, maybe two, whereas there was a time where it was virtually you'd look at all three. Wolves, who went up, I think they're going to finish in the top 10, actually. And the other side that went up, just remind me again, Fulham. Who was that? Fulham, yeah, I think Fulham are going to be okay. Although the TAB have got them to go down, but I think Fulham will be okay. The third team I'm going to pick, I see Aiden had Brighton.
Yep.
I think they're going to be in the mix because they need somebody other than Glenn Murray to score goals for them. But the team I'm picking is Watford. Once they lost their manager to Everton, two-thirds through last season, they had a bit of a terrible run, and they're not looking particularly impressive in terms of what they've done in the transfer market. So I think it's going to be, it could be a very long season for the Hornets.
Let's talk about the clubs that just sort of tread water every year. They're not going to go down. They're not going to really, you know, aim high. They sort of sit in the middle of the table. Do we expect a bolter? I know in the first 6 weeks you normally have someone leading who...
Yeah, they'll be bolted then.
Can you see anyone? I mean, was it last year? Burnley,
yeah, and Burnley ended up finishing seventh. So yeah. if you like the best of the rest sort of thing last year, and for a reasonable amount of the season, we're actually even higher than that. I don't know that Burnley can really get all that much better. They don't have a huge budget. They're well managed. So I think they'll sort of finish mid table again. Everton are the side. I mean, typically, yeah, over the last five or so seasons, if you're going to rank the teams and have a guess or whatever, the most likely bet is that Everton will finish seventh because they are the biggest of the rest of the clubs. Now, they've actually spent quite a lot of money in this transfer window, but they spent quite a lot of money in the previous one as well, and they didn't really gel. They bought too many similar players, etc. They seem to have bought a bit better this time around. They're heavily supported. You know, they do have a reasonable budget. So I'm actually picking that they would be the most likely club to break into the top six.
Mm. Yeah, Marco Silva's the manager there now. He's the man that left Watford. And they have spent heavily in the transfer market, including Yerry Mina, that tremendous Colombian centre-back who kept scoring goals at the World Cup. He's at Everton. Look, my bolter to come out of the pack, you're going to hate this, Matt.
Southampton?
No, Crystal Palace. You know, if you look at their record last season, they lost their first seven games in a row, which was a Premier League record.
Then got a new manager.
Yeah, Roy Hodgson came in, and their record from there was basically mid-table. And I think they're going to push on this year. They've got quality players there.
They still got a New Zealander as CEO?
That's the chap from Miramar, yeah. Isn't it? Craig Alexander?
Phil Alexander.
He's a friend of Chote's, isn't
yeah.
he? Was he the CEO?
He's the CEO, of Crystal Palace.
Yeah, yep. Well, there's another reason why they're going to go well. Players like Wilfred Zaha and Ben Tekke, I mean, if they can stay fit, and Roy Hodgson, I mean, you've got to take your hat off to him. I mean... And I mean, I see Sports Freak chuckling away there. You know, he's in his 70s now.
He will be known as the guy who took the boat down the River Seine the day before England lost to Iceland in Euro 2016.
Look, he's a little bit mad and a little bit crazy, but, you know, some of the great football managers have had those qualities over time. And the good news is they've renewed his contract. The Palace board are just appalling at sacking managers, people like Tony Pulis and Alan Pardew. They've kept him on. So, yeah, Crystal Palace, they're my one to come out of the pack.
10:21 time here on Radio Sport. Extended Saturday panel. Sports Freak's Graham Beasley from sportsfreak.co.nz and Hugh McCabe, the World Cup baby, talking all things English Premier League. Might get a bit of Phoenix talk going in a minute. But no word on Arsenal.
No, we haven't talked about
that. No one has mentioned the word. So are you expecting from them seventh and really...
No, sixth from Arsenal. But it's so hard to know because...
Who's coaching them? Or managing them?
Emery.
Unai Emery, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big unknown, and it's going to be really weird.
Is Wenger still the sort of full gold of Arsenal, if you know what I'm saying? Is he still around the club?
That's going to be really interesting. He has gone
Alex
quiet.
Ferguson.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see whether he's in the stands with his very long puffer jackets that he used to wear. But it's going to be weird watching Arsenal without seeing Wenger, you know, walking up and down the touchline and throwing water bottles and complaining and all that kind of stuff. Arsenal are a really unknown quantity. They haven't, apart from changing the manager, which will significantly change, you know, the whole team and the team culture and all that kind of stuff. They haven't been all that busy in the transfer market, so they're pretty much putting out the same team as last year, but with a new manager. So I don't think anyone knows how they're going to go. Got a tough start, though. They host Man City this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, Arsenal, isn't it? I mean, if you're, say you're 25 years old and you're an Arsenal fan all your life, you can't, there's never been a game of football that Arsene Wenger hasn't been the manager of your club. It's extraordinary, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, here's a quiz question. Who was the Arsenal manager before Arsene Wenger?
Very good question, actually.
Bruce Rioch's his name.
That's sort of from a whole different generation.
At least, I suppose Ferguson you can look at, but at least if we go back to this side of the world and Wayne Bennett, at least he sort of went and came back to the Broncos. You know, can you expect? My next question was going to be who's the first manager to be sacked, and then if it wasn't the Arsenal manager, would Wenger just sort of go, oh, well, I'll take the job again? You know,
Surely not. That would cause riots in North London if that happened, because, you know, they'd have to get their planes out again and start flying all those banners around above the Emirates Stadium. No, I can't see him coming back if that does fall over. And you would think with the Arsenal board being so patient with Wenger, and, you know, things were falling over there for 3 or 4 years before they finally got rid of him, I wouldn't see them pulling the trigger all that.
No, they're not a manager sacking club, are they?
You can say that with
confidence, given that their last one was there for 20 plus years.
So who will be the first manager sacked? Is there the TAB or the bookies in England would run a sweep on this. Are you expecting someone from the top or someone from the bottom?
Actually, it's quite interesting because,
well, Chelsea pulled the trigger pretty quickly, but they've got a new manager as well, haven't they?
Yeah, from the man from Napoli, Maurizio Sarri. I don't think it'll be Chelsea. Interestingly, the least, we'll go the other end, the least favoured manager to be sacked, in other words, the 20th least favoured manager, is Sean Dyche from Burnley. So that tells you something. They're just never going to sack that guy, are they? It's a bit like Arsene Wenger.
Because they know they're overachieving. So,
And Sports Freak and I were talking about this off-air before, and we couldn't really identify someone. Last year it was Frank de Boer at Crystal Palace who went after 5 matches because they lost 5 games in a row. So whoever it is will be hoping they'll last in the job more than roughly a month. That's quite a good question, actually, Matt. Will it be from a top side or a bottom side?
Like, in the world of sport and what we've seen this week from the NRL with the Penrith Panthers, could you see a team running second, you know, all of a sudden going, oh, we don't like the coach and we'll just get rid of him, you know? Or, you know?
Not in the Premier League. Even Chelsea waits to the end of the season before they sack their manager, even though they finished sort of in the top three or something.
So, Man
like that.
City, for both of you to win it, and we're talking Cardiff, Huddersfield, Brighton, these sort of clubs to go down.
Watford, particularly Cardiff and Huddersfield.
Okay.
Actually, Cardiff City, Neil Warnock, he's been sacked by about 58 clubs in his career, so he could be the first man to go. Although I think Cardiff will give him a little bit of time anyway.
How do these guys keep reappearing, though? Talk about Mark Hughes at Southampton. How many clubs has he coached?
Not as many as Neil Warnock. he's had more clubs than Jack Nicklaus.
Sam Allardyce?
Yep, Pardew. Sam Allardyce is another one. Pardew, yep.
Yeah, actually, someone should do the stats on that. Who's done the most out of those people? Roy Hodgson, of course, would be in the mix there too.
Graham Beasley from sportsfreak.co.nz and Hewitt McCabe, the World Cup baby, joining me here on Radio Sport for about another 5 minutes or so. Fellas, let's get to the Hyundai A-League. Couple of big announcements during the week. He's coming. Usain Bolt to the Central Coast Mariners. Good for the sport or not?
Well, you run a red flag up when they make an announcement that the decision on whether to sign him or not will not be made by the manager. It will be made by the club.
Well, it's a marketing stunt.
That's right. So when you've got a sporting club where it's being run by the marketing department rather than the football manager, that's a bit of a problem. But I'm a real hypocrite on this one because I think it's just a PR stunt and it's wrong that marketing is running things. But if they do sign him and Central Coast Mariners come to play the Phoenix, I'll absolutely go along to watch
because
that.
All they're going to do is, in that first game he plays, I heard this morning, maybe late August, as early as the 30th of August or something, at Central Coast, they're just going to put him on the wing and try and put balls down there and go on, Usain, chase it and see how fast he runs. You know, that's all it's going to be, isn't it? Because
long diagonal balls to the wing, and go chase it, Usain.
Because I heard Jeremy Brockie with Jason Pine, and Brockie said his touch, he trained with him for some reason in South Africa. His touch isn't very good at all. So it's a bit of a...
Is that right? I've never seen him play football, I'll be honest. I have seen him juggle a ball. That was quite impressive. But how he's going to go on the pitch. But I tell you what, like Tom Doyle, I'm going to be worried at the moment.
but you'd go along to watch him, wouldn't you?
Well,
you go anyway, don't you?
But, look, Graham, I go and go along every fortnight and watch the total crap that's served up.
But
so
most,
I'm going to watch anything.
You see, me, I mean, I'll be honest, I'll probably go and watch about half of the Phoenix home games. So I'm one of those annoying supporters.
But what about this Chestnut,
Graham? Absolutely go and watch Central Coast Mariners, where typically I wouldn't.
What about all the football commentators, true, including yourselves, that go, oh, yes, when footballers, you can't beat natural speed. Well, he's got plenty of it, hasn't he? So he should be a world beater.
Oh, it's going
to
be interesting.
Let's get to the thing.
All he has to do is put in a decent cross and he'll be useful.
It's quite tall as well. Anyway, to the Phoenix we go. Not the result they wanted. Well, we have to, because the season's not too far away, about 6 months.
Exactly, yeah. What are they doing playing now? Yeah,
a few signings, a bit of a hit out on Wednesday, which was on Sky. You watched it, I didn't. They lost 1-0 to the Burnley Rovers or whoever it was. Or
Bethnal Green. I know, that's a pub in Wellington. It was something like that.
What did you make of it, Ewan?
The thing is, a new coach, and he's different, and he's very positive, and they're all talking about a new culture, and he's got some pretty handy signings there. But
how did it compare to some of the World Cup games you watched?
It was incredibly difficult. As I was saying before, the phrase they couldn't score in a brothel came to my mind. Poor old Nathan Burns. I think what Nathan Burns just needs a goal, goal.
The old confidence restorer.
Do they play finals this year? Is it top 8 of the 10 comp or?
It's top 6. Oh, look, they still could. Just as long as they show some improvement. I know that's not a particularly ambitious outlook, but as long as, you know, the whole club's got to get back on track, and it's not going to happen overnight. I think the coach is a very good choice, and did you see the interview afterwards? He wasn't taking any prisoners. He was irritated and annoyed, and he didn't let any of those journalists kind of walk over him. So he's a tough man, and so I think that's what they need. They need a bit of backbone, and eventually
he's annoyed because he's not going to get any decent footy before the start of the season.
Well, first of all, I can't think of a single competition in the world where you have, I mean, in a whole lot of competitions, you have a parallel cup competition, or in something like the NRL, you have the nines that's held like a week before the competition starts. You know, they have some other side competition going on. But for that to be 2 months before the main event starts, I can't think of a precedent for that. It's just so A-League, that whole sort of concept. And I think it's too early to tell how the Phoenix are going to go this year. Ewan's right in terms of it needs a new culture, that they need to build up, etc. And he hasn't been here long enough to see, you know, how that can go. So they still have those other 2 months, even if they don't really get to play a game in those 2 months. I see the Napier City Rovers have kindly offered to play them. So I think it'll only be after those 2 months. They've still got more players to come in. You know, there's still a few holes there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to change that culture, get them actually talking to each other, training together, etc. It's only once the A-League proper starts that I think we'll have any gauge on how they'll go.
They've also got to open up now with the Usain Bolt window, so every time he plays, they play in a, you know, just that game that weekend, you know. So, hey, before I let you go, fellas, and thanks for your time this morning. Fantastic to have you in the studio. I just want to talk for the next 2 minutes about sporting administration in New Zealand. New Zealand football's had its issues, right? I understand that. I was talking to my producer, Mark Kelly, before. We're now up to league, netball, football, rowing and cycling. What is going wrong?
I think in the case of the first three...
Sorry, Graham. Before you get... Mark and I were having this chat about is there a balance between win and not having that sort of Australian cricket team mentality where you win at all costs? So basically the athletes get treated like...
And that, is my understanding, is what the issue with rowing has been.
Yeah.
They've had too much of that issue. You know, they haven't let people go back to bed at the birth of their children and all that kind of stuff. So that's what the rowing issue is. And I think maybe cycling's a little bit like that as well. I think in the case of league football and netball, they've just lost the focus and got too much on the commercial side of things. And the boards have got very few, not just ex-players, but even people who know about the sport. They're basically just sort of MBA graduates that have come on and made all these decisions. The classic example of that is league having that test in Denver rather than playing Tonga and Auckland. I mean, it's just so obvious that that is what should happen in that window. So they've lost the focus. Football, wow. Andy Martin will be a bit of a legend, in inverted commas, I think, over time. If you can
wind Jason Pine up,
he spoke about it to me this morning,
and he spoke about the football Ferns coach and Andy Martin with disdain this morning to me. If you can get him wound up.
Yeah, he's just wielded a wrecking ball throughout the whole institution, really. Often you can sum a person up by a small event. And the fact that he put out that press release saying that he had retired and then is wanting money for being dismissed, that just sums up what kind of human being he is.
I think in New Zealand, it used to be that these administrators were amateur. They were too amateur. That was the complaint, wasn't it? There were people that loved their sport, but they didn't have the skills to run the organisation. Yep. And I think what's happened is we've gone too far the other way now.
Totally agree.
We've turned it over to these professional people who perhaps don't have the core love of the sport or the interest in the sport, and they've dropped the ball, basically, in a different way, but essentially,
don't mind flying up the front end of the plane themselves. Thanks very much for your time, fellas. Fantastic news overnight. Ryan Thomas has moved to a bigger and better club.
PSV Eindhoven, the strongest Dutch club.
Yep. So we'll have a New Zealander playing Champions League football. And also, everybody disses the A-League. I'd just like to point out that one of Manchester City's signings, potentially the best club team in the world, although some Spanish people will disagree with that, is Daniel Azani from Melbourne City.
Beautiful work.
There you go.
Who owns Melbourne City,
Manchester City. But there you go, a feeder now into the Premier League, the A-League. So expect to see.
And that is why the very big clubs actually buy other clubs in smaller leagues. It's a good place to trial a player.
I'm hoping someone will buy the Phoenix.
Manchester United or Liverpool. Anyway, fellas, thanks very much for coming to the studio.